Hello, and welcome to the Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
I'm Jordan Crook.
And joining us today is TechCrunch writer Sarah Perez, who covers streaming and apps and all other kinds of good things. Thanks for joining us, Sarah.
Hi.
So we are going to review this new documentary series on Netflix called Cheer, which it seems like a lot of people have very strong opinions about. We'll get to that in just a few minutes. I did want to touch on one piece of news before we did that, though, which is this news that Netflix is laying off some employees and changing its marketing strategy. I think the layoffs seem like they're relatively small, about 15 people, which is, you know, for a company of Netflix's size is not huge. But it also seems to indicate that Netflix is rethinking some of the ways that it promotes itself and maybe shifting some of the energy away from promoting individual, like some of the like ad campaigns, maybe less focused on individual movies or TV shows, and move towards promoting just the idea that you need to be signing up for Netflix or promoting Netflix as a service. Does that seem like a shift that makes sense to you guys?
Yeah, maybe because they don't have that many good shows anymore.
Oh, wow. Boom.
Coming out strong, Sarah.
Yeah, seriously, what are you talking about? It's Netflix.
I mean, look, I still like some of their comedy specials and everything, but some of their like big headliners, like Orange is the New Black, you know, is over. And I'm not really into The Crown and that sort of thing. House of Cards, I never watched. So like Stranger Things, that's cool, but that's like one show. So what else you got for me?
Oh,
a bunch of like
gracious
teen movies and reality stuff.
Another Life? Greatest TV show that's ever happened?
So, okay.
Wow. Okay.
I think it's more like personal, like it's really like trying to like personalize the service now. So they don't have like these very, very big mainstream level shows that everyone is watching anymore. They have something that appeals to individuals, but they're like smaller scale shows.
I agree. We've talked about this a lot on the podcast, that they've like kind of nichified themselves to some extent, but I still think that there is so, so much good content on Netflix. I mean, I just devour it. I just feel like it's so much of my life at this point. Like, I don't even know what else to say about it.
They really got you figured out then. They're just, all their shows are like just right for you.
I'm just like giving myself over to it too, because I used to not like build lists and rate things and stuff. And now I'm like, now I do it. Cause I'm like,
you fed them more data.
Scratch your back, you'll scratch my back. Right. Like, I'm in the trade with them. I'm transacting with them as we speak. I'm just like, add that to my list. What else you got for me? Show it to me. It's very flirty too, as you can tell.
I will say that, I mean, I do feel like, and I don't think there seems to be some, I'm referring to this Hollywood Reporter story, which kind of broke the news about the layoffs. And it seems like the people they talk to, some of them have different opinions about exactly what the strategy is going to be going forward. So there may be like, this isn't like an official announcement or anything. So take it with a grain of salt. But if they are kind of going in this direction, I do think there's, I don't know. I like the fact that sometimes Netflix, you know, makes its shows feel like an event. Like when a new season of Stranger Things comes out and they're like giant billboards advertising it everywhere. I think that's cool. I think that's like kind of a pretty like ballsy move. And so I hope that doesn't go away entirely. I mean, ultimately, you know, it's an advertising strategy. They can do whatever the hell they want that works for their business. But I like the fact that like in a lot of ways they're less about saying you need to sign up for Netflix, because the implicit assumption is, hey, like you've got Netflix, here's like a big event that you need to be paying attention to.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting because I don't really think about Netflix's like marketing strategy at all. Like it just feels like something that exists, right? Like we're all like it's already there, but I realize now that you're mentioning it how I actually am like in on it. I interact with like some of the shows I follow, their Twitter accounts, to see when the new seasons are coming and if they've been, you know, re-upped for a next season and stuff like that, particularly like the ones that are more niche and all about me. But I'm not sure how much that fits into this. I mean, we don't know what the new marketing strategy is, but anyway, interesting. Also, wait, Sarah, did you watch Lost in Space season 2?
I have not started it yet. It's sort of on my to-do list, but like further down in terms of priority. And that's sort of the problem I have with a lot of the new Netflix shows is like, I might enjoy them, but I'm not drawn to them, or like, I don't feel this urgent need to go back and, you know, as soon as they're, you know, the new season is on. And I get that feeling from other shows, but maybe not from Netflix shows anymore.
I do think that I straddle the line with what you're talking about. Like, there are some shows where I'm like, I'm not ready for the next season of this, but I am. Like, some stuff I just actively, even the first season, I like actively hold off because I just know I'm not in the mood. But like, yeah, it's good to know that it's there one day. And then some stuff like Lost in Space, like I literally the day it came out, I think it was December 26th or something. And I was just like, okay, here we go. Strap in. Let's do it.
It's sort of falling into this like comfort TV zone where you can kind of turn it on and watch it and it'll be fine, but it's not great television.
I don't know. I disagree with some of that. It's true in some cases and not in others. We'll just go with that.
That's true. I mean, it is a generalization and obviously those never totally work, but.
And all their originals are never going to be like House of Cards or just the New Black season 2, you know, like they're just not going
to
be that. Like that's.
But they used
it's like
to be.
Startups. It's a little bit of magic. Yeah, but right. Like that was before their strategy. That was like at a time when none of the networks and cable providers and broadcasters had figured out like we're eventually going to have to go stream. Like why are we giving Netflix like, you know, at cost Friends all 10 seasons? Like that's a silly thing to do. But Netflix foresaw that, right? And they were like, okay, well, we have to what? Quadruple, you know, like 12x, 20x our amount of original content. It can't be quality over quantity every time now. And so, yeah, over the past few years, that shift has definitely happened. So there's a lot more originals. So you can't just look at it and say, oh, the Netflix originals are going to be blockbusters. They're going to be like prestige TV across the board because there's what? There's like 20, like probably 5 originals launching this month. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, they're not all going to be
that. I mean,
more
than 5, depending on the, like, TV shows and movies and documentary series and all of that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I just meant,
they
like, TV
need
shows.
Some prestige titles, I still believe. And, you know, a lot of what they're investing in is sort of, like, B-movies and teen rom-coms and, you know, second-rate sci-fi. And there's just not a lot of, like, really great stuff.
I hear you.
Well, so to transition, I mean, I will say that I think that Cheer is something that actually, before we get into the quality of it, it seems like something that has kind of, you know, risen above the noise. And that, like, I was really surprised that suddenly it seemed like everyone I knew had already seen Cheer and was talking about Cheer. And in fact, I think both of you, before we'd even decided to make that the review for this week, had already watched the entire series, right?
Yeah. Yes.
It's a great exception to this generalization that I've been making.
You like it, right, Sarah?
Oh, yeah. I love it.
Yeah, me too.
I thought it was fantastic.
Does one of you maybe just want to like kind of give a general outline of what the show's about?
Sure. So Cheer follows a particular junior college competitive cheer squad during their spring semester. Their one and only competition is at the end of April. So they spend all of their spring semester preparing for it. And it kind of pulls back the lid on a couple things. One, just competitive cheerleading in general. Some people are, you know, most people I think are really unaware of that this whole world exists. And two, this particular college team, which is, like I said, a community college that has won, I think, 14 national championships and 5 grand national championships. And just for context sake, so like I went to At my high school, we had a competitive cheer team that went to the NCAA championships as well and competed in their own division. There are many, many, many divisions. So that doesn't take anything away from their 14 national championships, but that's one of, you know, dozens of different divisions that compete. The Grand National Championship, however, which they've won five of, means that you are the best cheer team at this entire competition across every division. So this random college in Corsicana, Texas, also like, you know, a couple hours from where I grew up, is the most winningest, you know, like they're the top dogs, and their coach, Monica Aldama, is the reason for that in a lot of ways. And you can see that, and that can be a good or bad thing. People have different takes on it, but yeah, that's basically the story. And it kind of follows a little bit of their personal lives, but really only through the lens of cheer and what it means to be on the cheer team, what it means to be a part of a team, to have a coach, to kind of put your body out on the line for something that's bigger than just you. It's really, really great. I loved it a lot.
Yeah, definitely. I agree.
Yeah, and I also agree, which is, and I think, you know, for me, it was definitely something that did not strike close to home in any way. Like, I knew essentially nothing about competitive cheer going into it.
Were you surprised by, like, the fact that there's this whole, like, underworld of what we imagine cheerleading to be that's, like, hyper-competitive, like, super athletic, like, just really intense?
I was surprised. I mean, not in the sense that I had a sense of just sort of the athleticism and talent that's required to go into cheerleading, but I still thought about it as something that is primarily about supporting other teams and cheering for other teams. I mean, I'd seen Bring It On. So I had like a vague sense that there were these cheerleading competitions, but they seemed very much kind of off to the side. And so the fact that there was this entire culture that's been built up and this incredibly competitive culture was definitely all news to me. And I think this has sort of dominated a lot of the conversation about the show and certainly a lot of the articles that I've read, including one that you shared, Sarah, is just like the sheer amount of physical risk that goes into it and injury. And I mean, one of my predominant emotions watching the show, particularly during any of the performance or practice scenes, is like absolute physical, like, tension, like just suspense, because I'm just like, please, please don't drop her. Please, please don't let something terrible happen to them while this is being shot. And most of the time, that's, you know, it is just seeing these people execute these seemingly impossible moves. And then once in a while, something really disturbing happens. And like, it's some sort of like really terrifying injury. And like, I think probably once per episode, I would just like scream profanity because I was so alarmed by something that just happened on screen.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts and feelings on the whole injury and how we think about injuries within sports and stuff. I don't want to step on it anything too soon. So Sarah, do you have feelings about this?
Yeah, I agree with Anthony. Like, my exposure to the world of competitive cheerleading was pretty much limited to Bring It On until this.
Very good film.
And I guess in the back of my mind, I did imagine that, you know, if you're practicing these really death-defying stunts, there were going to be drops and falls. But to actually see it on your screen, you see these kids just falling and hurting themselves and going to the ER, it really, there were just moments where you're just cringing, like, oh my God, I can't believe I just watched that. There wasn't even a trigger warning or anything. But it also really invests you in their story and their, you know, by the time you get to the last episode where they're competing, you probably want them to win just as much as they do. So it's a great storytelling technique as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so like I said, I think that there are a couple things about this show in general that have made me feel really attached to it. One is that it's, like I said, like 50 miles from where I grew up and went to high school, and Navarro College does have, you know, it's a junior college. It has a bit of a high school-y vibe. We're talking about younger kids in terms of college years. And that, you know, I played competitive volleyball. So I didn't just play school volleyball, but I played in club volleyball as well and gave myself to it year round. I'm very, very competitive athlete my whole life, really. And some of my closest friends were on my high school competitive cheerleading team. And I used to actually, their practice went like 30 or 40 minutes longer than mine. So I would sit and watch them. And I just remember like being like, man, that is so cool. And it's the same thing that they said in cheer, which is like, no one knows what the hell we're doing over here. Like people see us at football games and they're like, wow, that's cool and stuff. But they don't realize that these girls are like, you know, my high school is just a girls team, but they're just working so hard and they're such incredible athletes and what they can do is insane. And they were getting hurt a lot, just like, you know, at Navarro College. And there was something about it that was very like nostalgic for me and took me back to a different time in my life. So I think I liked it for that. But with regards to the injury stuff, I mean, to me, there was one scene in which I think Monica as a coach crossed the line, which was when TT came in with a back injury and as punishment she made him keep doing it. The two reasons for that: one is that it could cause like a lasting injury for him, and that's got to be the coach's first priority, is like, you know, am I going to do irreversible damage to these children? And two, she put her other people at risk, right? Like people who had to, he had to catch the people who were flying in the air. So if his back's messed up, that's dangerous. So I don't think that was the right call, but I do think she's a human who makes mistakes and coaches make mistakes too. So I think hopefully she would say, hey, I regret the way that I handled that. Maybe she didn't, I don't know. Everything else to me, I mean, these people are adults. They're choosing to participate in a sport that's dangerous. My big thing is making sure that everyone knows the risk associated. Like the reason that the football thing was so eye-opening is because we didn't understand why these veteran football stars were, you know, behaving the way that they were and why they were suffering from such a depression and these violent thoughts and all of that stuff. I mean, they didn't know what they were getting into. But if you have a, you know, 10-year-old son and you're about to sign him up for football, you know what you have no excuse to not know what you're getting them into. And if they're an adult and they choose to continue playing football or doing any dangerous sport, how many dangerous sports are out there? There's hockey, there's all the skiing and the X Games and the skateboarding. These people are making a choice to put their body on the line for something that they think is worth it. And I feel like, you know, cheerleading might be more dangerous than volleyball, but I had some long-term injuries playing sports that you just have to fight through. And there's something about that that's character building too. So as far as Monica as a coach, I do think she crossed the line with TT, but I've also had coaches my whole life who, it's a hard thing to learn in sports, but you have to learn the difference between, are you hurt or are you hurting? You know, are you injured or are you in pain? Those are two different things sometimes. And I think cheerleading has to do that a lot, right? Because these people get bruised and banged. They roll their ankles, but is it something popped? Is something broken? Because if it's not, then it's just pain and you got to work through it, because that's, you know, that's the sport. That's life too. So I don't know. I'm not like super into all of the like criticisms of Monica as a coach. And there's also in the article you sent in particular, Sarah, the author said something about how like Monica shows like a cool indifference towards them when it's their personal life, or doesn't seem to acknowledge that she's like a mother figure to them. And I just don't think that's true.
Actually, what the article said was more that it's this weird contrast where when it comes to the physical injuries, she seems indifferent, but that she can actually be very, very warm and protective of their personal lives. So is that in some context, she seems like a mother figure. And then in this specific context around their physical safety, she doesn't.
But it also said that if she understands that she is a mom figure to them. She doesn't say it or show it. That's what that article said as well. So I don't know if I don't know. I'm not trying to rip into this particular article. I just think that she seems to me like the kind of figure that has to hide a lot for the sake of being the leader of the team, right? And keeping her people calm and keeping everything even keeled and not letting emotions get away and not letting anyone think she's playing favorites. But I'm sure it, from the way that the kids talk about her, and I've had good coaches and bad coaches, and from the way that they talk about her, I really think that she clearly dedicates her time and attention to them in a way that makes them feel loved and taken care of. And I think that's like the most you can ask from a coach. You know,
also,
you know,
some of the, you know, conversations they may have had of a more personal nature were not the things that were shown on the screen.
Exactly.
You know, there were times where they walked away from the cameras to have a private conversation. There was one time in particular I remember where was it Lexi was going through something.
Yeah.
We had posted photos of her online that were inappropriate, and she wanted to talk about it, but the camera was there, and then they kind of walked away from the camera. So you could tell that there was that supportive relationship. It maybe just was not the focus of the film.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it was definitely there, and you just read between the lines to see it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And just so for people who are listening and haven't necessarily followed a lot of the conversation about the show, what we're referring to specifically is this article that was in The Atlantic called Cheers Built on a Pyramid of Broken Bodies. And it is sort of those criticisms that we were just talking about. I think there's been other commentary in sort of in a similar vein, but that's been kind of the one that I think we read most recently and are addressing most specifically. I think that I agree that it's sort of hard to, because the documentary is clearly, you know, only going to be able to show so much and focus on specific areas. I'm not very comfortable. And again, because it's not an area that I know a lot about, you know, competitive cheer. I'm not comfortable like watching the documentary and saying like, oh, I think Monica is or is not a good person or anything like that. And so I think focusing too much on her maybe is less helpful than what I think maybe is an interesting conversation that the show has spurred is also just this broader conversation about, you know, are we comfortable with the idea of people putting their, you know, their bodies and their well-being at risk in this way, you know, for this sport? And I don't have any good answer to that. And as you said, Jordan, in the case of these students we're watching, these Navarro students that we're watching, they are adults and they presumably have some idea of what they're getting into. I will say that, I mean, I think two things that add some gray to that is one is, you know, there's the immediate injuries of like, which I think kind of get the most attention on the show, which is like, if you break something that affects your ability to perform physically, like, that's really obvious immediately, but also, you know, it presumably, hopefully can heal. I think one of the things that the Atlantic article references, and certainly I found really kind of scary in the show, was people just talking about how many concussions they've had. And
yeah,
that like at one point, oh yeah, I've had like 5 concussions. And like, I don't think you know immediately what the impact of that, like that maybe when they're 40, 50, 60, like there could be, you know, repercussions that we don't know about now. And I think that the other aspect is that all of these people, right, to get to be this good at cheerleading, they had to start when they were children, right? So they were, when they first kind of got put in this position or you know, signed up for the sport, they were children. And that's not to say that anyone was doing anything wrong by signing up or like their parents are bad parents or anything like that. But again, I think that question of consent or even informed consent is sort of slightly complicated because, you know, by the time they're an adult, this is the world they know. Like, they are committed to this world. And so on the one hand, I want to respect their ability to say, this is what I care about. I care about excellence in this field. And if that means really fucking up my body in the process, so be it. But on the flip side, you know, feeling a little bit conflicted about whether or not that was ever really a choice that they were able to make, because by the time they were adults, this was the only world they knew.
Right.
Just indoctrinated into it. Yeah, I agree with that. And there's the article also made a good point that cheerleading is not recognized as a varsity sport by the National Collegiate Athletic Association, which standardizes safety measures and regulates risk, it says. And cheerleading's governing body, the National Cheerleaders Association, doesn't have as many safety rules as some of these other varsity sports. So that's an area which, you know, maybe because of this documentary that might get more attention, that maybe, you know, coaches like Monica, they are tough, but every now and then they might need to be checked a little, like in the case that you mentioned with TT, Jordan.
Yeah.
So maybe more conversation will come out of this.
I think it's a sign of a great docuseries, in my opinion, when you think about it and say, wow, okay, we could do one on the personal lives of these kids, right? Because they're all actually very interesting and have interesting histories and, you know, be compelling content. You could look at Monica on her own, and that would be interesting. You could look at the NCAA and varsity sports brands or whatever it's called, and their kind of controlling stake in this weird secret underworld. And you could look at some of these health risks and underfunding and no regulation in terms of the sport itself. And you could do exactly the same thing as season one next year. And I would watch all of them, all five of those, right? Like that to me is a sign of a great docuseries where you're literally like, you could just give me more of this stuff. Like, this is all interesting. It's all good. And I think that it shows a lot of restraint on the filmmaker's part to bring up the questions and say, listen, we're going to give you 2 minutes of this part because we just don't, you know, that's not what this is about. You know, and I think that they showed a lot of restraint. And, you know, I think that that Atlantic article is kind of a list of complaints of all of the questions that weren't answered. But I don't think it would be the same thing that it is if they went down every single road that could have been explored in this, you know.
They even touched on, I forget the name of the company, but it basically owns everything cheerleading.
It's Varsity. Yeah. Varsity Brands or whatever.
Oh, Varsity Brands. Yes. And they own the streaming service, and they even refused the filmmakers the right to film, you know, this part of the documentary. So they had to have people with iPhones filming the last bit, which was just crazy that they
would have
that much control.
If Varsity is the reason why a second season doesn't get made, I'm gonna start a change.org petition. I'm not going to have that.
I think you and a bunch of people, yeah.
So that's interesting that you guys feel like this. Does this feel to you like sort of a completed thing, or does it feel like the first season of a longer project?
The first season. And I would be fine seeing a different team, but I actually think that considering that they've got this legacy of, you know, 14 wins, 5 grand national championships, feels to me like, and we've got recurring characters and old character or and new characters, right? Because we're going to have an incoming class of freshmen, and then we have the freshmen from this year graduating to sophomores, and then we have this kind of through line with Monica and Navarro. They should be there right now. It's January 29th. Like, they're practicing. So, like, Netflix needs to get there now. Like, I'm the Judge Judy GIF right now. Yeah. Like,
might be
let's go.
Late. The kids don't necessarily stay, you know, at the college. I think Gabby has already moved on and is cheering with another pro
team. But Morgan and Lexi are there still, right?
And Lexi seems to be back, according to her Instagram, even though she was thrown off.
Yeah, that felt like it would get overturned.
Spoiler.
That felt like we shouldn't get into that right now. But
yeah. But there's been no official announcement, so take that with a grain of salt. But, it's not like a reality TV show where you're following someone's life and you can just kind of follow whatever they happen to be doing. If you're really focused on Navarro Cheer, then the people involved with that are going to be changing out every couple of years.
Right. So you'll get some known characters and some new characters every single season, theoretically, right? Because you watch the freshman become sophomore.
And it could also potentially be, who knows, but it could be not something that they want to do longer than they've already done, because having the cameras around was probably pretty disruptive to their practice. And not everyone probably wanted to become a Netflix star. They just were really into cheerleading.
I mean, considering that they are going on Ellen, and I mean, I've been investigating this because I really do want a season two. And
yeah,
they were at Netflix HQ, like the girls and Monica were recently. And then they were also on the Ellen show. And their Twitter and their Instagram is very promotional around it. So
right. But that's that handful that were featured on the show. The whole right. team is like, how many people?
40.
40? Okay. Right.
I'm sure there's a lot of chemistry issues around the fact that some people were literally not featured really at all. And then others were like main characters. That would cause a lot of drama within a team. But
right. So it's just a whole nother factor to consider whether they want to become like the star of an ongoing series versus this one-time documentary. But right. I could see a spinoff where in a couple of the breakout stars from the show kind of get their own program if they were into that, and it follows them around with their new team, for example, which might be like a pro team and their one that they could potentially stay in for years, and as opposed to the changing out of new college students all the time.
I don't know. I would be fine with the exact same thing over and over again.
I mean, I'll just
Navarro College's spring semester every yeah. year for the rest of my life. I'm going to be happy.
Yeah. I mean, I've already followed like the Instagrams of like everyone.
I mean, one of the things I did find really fascinating was not just the physical, you know, the kind of challenges that we talked about and the dangers that we talked about, but also like the fact that it is this really, that there's this whole culture that has essentially been invisible to me, and that there are celebrities who have come out of competitive cheerleading and, you know, have these huge Instagram followings. And it was so interesting to see that like all of the major, people on the team all have Instagram profiles that are really, really popular. And I'm just curious, like, I mean, I guess in some ways that's true of probably other kinds of collegiate sports, but like the dynamic that must be in play when you have genuine celebrities on your college team must be kind of strange.
Well, I think it's interesting. So two notes to make. One, I think cheerleading has this slightly more than other sports or other big name sports, right? Like football and basketball and baseball. Like, you know, there are so many collegiate celebrity quote unquote players, right? We've got big pro leagues that start drafting them when they're freshmen, sometimes even in high school. So, you know, that's its own kind of massive mass media system. Whereas something like cheerleading that does fly under the radar, that does not get the same ESPN love, collegiate love, pro love, mass media, you know, mainstream love, they do form their own little like, okay, fine. Well, there's still hundreds of thousands of us, I assume. Let's just do it for ourselves, right? And so I think there is something about that. I will also say that when I played volleyball, which I think is similar, I think it's like a kind of under the radar sport. People don't realize how serious it is at the club level. And there was some of that too. Like I remember a girl named Taylor Otto. Was it Taylor or Lauren? But I know her last name was Otto because when she walked into the gym, and when I say gym, we're talking about like ages 12 through 18, two teams each. So we're talking about like hundreds of girls in this gym, in this giant gym playing volleyball. And when she walked in, you could hear her arrival spread through the gym. Like, Otto's here, Otto's here. Like, and when she hit, the whole gym stopped and watched her hit. Like, she was so good and was being, you know, sniffed out by all these colleges. And she was like a celebrity, right? And she would walk in and be around us, but like, you didn't know if you could talk to her really. It was a very weird thing. And, you know, I feel like that's probably very similar to how they felt with Gabby and some of the others as well.
It also reminds me of my girlfriend is a speech pathologist, which is basically like a speech therapist. And I had no idea that there are almost celebrity speech therapists who have, you know, these huge Instagram followings because they post either inspirational or informative stuff that then all the speech therapists in the country want to read about. And so just like it's always interesting to see these subcultures that are not necessarily huge in this, in the context of everyone in the country, but, you know, even if you're a tiny percentage of hundreds of millions of people, there's still like a huge audience there, and that it can just, again, be in one context, they're huge celebrities, and then they step out of that and I have no idea who they are.
Okay, so do we want to maybe get into spoiler territory? I could kind of walk through the story.
Let me ask one question before we get into spoiler territory, which is just, I think we all agree that this is a very good and well-made documentary. And, you know, regardless of, I think, and part of what makes it good is that I think you can walk away from it with, like, different people can walk away from it with very different opinions of Monica and the other characters in it and the institution of competitive cheerleading. But what has also surprised me is, again, is what I started with, which is just the extent to which it seems like this show has really caught on. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily a Stranger Things level success, at least not yet, but it seems like something that a lot of people are talking about in a way that I can't think of any other documentary series, at least not except maybe some true crime documentary series. But other than that, it really seems to have caught people's imaginations. Like, why do you think that is?
I think there are a lot of factors at play here. I think one is just sheer fascination and entertainment value in what cheerleading is. Like, once you pull the lid off of, whoa, this exists and people do this and they do these insane, crazy routines with so much happening at once, I think that is just one piece of it where it's like, who can't enjoy that, right? Like, that's like just entertainment at its best. But then there's also these kind of thoroughfares where it's like, kind of like what we were talking about with Encore, Anthony. I know you're just kind of like listening along with us last week, but like, you know how Daryl and I were talking about how Encore is this weird, can't look away type of reality television because you feel like you're actually seeing something real. Now, all that said, this documentary is heavily edited, right? Like, we don't know. And there could be so much context behind everything that we look at and things out of place, etc. But there's a realness that you feel with it. Like the one scene I'm thinking of in particular, there's a scene where Morgan and her family are talking about how she loves Monica. She's in love with Monica. Just, you know, that she just thinks of her as a mom. And there's this, and it kind of cuts to this shot of Morgan looking at Monica and just the way she's looking at her. It just feels very, there's a real like reality to it, you know? And I don't know, did you guys play sports? Because to me, I know that for me, it definitely sparked like this, like I said, nostalgia.
I think the series also has just so much heart to it because it takes the time to pause from the competitiveness and the training to tell these cheerleaders true stories about their childhood in a lot of cases, which was really rough. And we're talking about abandoned kids and abuse and things like that. And, you know, they've found this home with this cheerleading squad. And I think that really also helps to engage you with this because now it's not just some, oh, I want to see how this team does. Wow, that coach is amazing. These stunts are cool. But you really get invested in the people themselves. You really care about them.
I totally agree. And they made some really interesting choices. Like, they don't shy away from the awkwardness of stuff sometimes. Like, there was a scene where Lexi was trying to talk about what cheerleading means to her in her dorm. And her grandma's phone kept ringing.
I loved that.
And so she kept like, okay, I guess I'll start over. And she would start over and then the phone rang again. She's like, you know, and she's kind of mad at grandma, but also like not really because that's not really Lexi's vibe. And she's like, are you going to turn it off or like whatever, you know, and she starts over again. There's also a scene where Gabby's parents get in one of the most uncomfortable fights I think I've ever seen on television. There was something, do you know what I'm talking about, Sarah, where they're like, do you want to tell the story? You just tell the story because you want to tell the story.
Oh, yeah. Well, like, and Gabby's parents weren't necessarily painted in the best light. I
no,
mean,
they were not. I mean, they looked. I mean, I actually am
avoiding her a little bit.
I'm kind of with the mom. Like, the mom definitely has a little bit, like, a lot of pride for Gabby, and the way she talks about her could rub people the wrong way. But I'm down with that. Like, she clearly loves the shit out of Gabby and is so proud of her that she can't stop talking about it. The dad was like, I hope that's not who he really is, because he was just like bottom of the barrel human. I'm sorry. I know he's a real person, but like, man, he just felt really fake and insecure and lots
of
mean
words.
It
just seemed like he was really, really wanting her to make the most money she possibly could before she got all old and out of the business. But I did read somewhere, and I can't remember where, that since the documentary aired, she's been able to have a conversation with her parents about, you know, how they ended up appearing to be portrayed on this, and maybe they've come to some sort of better understanding about, you know, her being able to take control of her life or whatever. So that's good. But yeah, it definitely was, I mean, it definitely felt real though, that he, Instagram fame, a lot of parents put their kids on social media, YouTube and Instagram, and then they just sort of like run that as their business and take over their lives with it. I mean, there were conversations about, oh, you know, those bathing suit shots you do, you know, are really great. They do the best. And now we've got this bathing suit line. Like, at what point did she get to have a say in these decisions that they were making about her image?
Right.
You know, did she want to be a model? I don't know. Like, maybe she did. Maybe she was really interested in, you know, doing a fashion line of bathing suits as her post cheerleading career, but maybe she wanted to be portrayed more as an athlete. And I don't know if she, how much she was able to get her own suggestions in there when it came to how her image is online.
My read on Gabby was that all she wanted was like a 6-month vacation. I think she was fine with most of it. I think she was just fucking tired. Like, she's just exhausted. She's been doing this since she was like, what, 10, 9, you know, like, she's just tired, like, and she was just sick of them buzzing around her, I think. But I do think that the overall point, though, and to answer your question, Anthony, I do think that there's a factor of can't look away, even though you might want to, that runs through it in a multiple different ways. One is just the injuries and the fact that they're up in the air and there's tension in that. You like want to look away, but you can't. And part of it is like the reality of these people's lives and who they are and their personalities, where you're like, ugh, awkward fight, awkward situation, or just like slightly uncomfortable, want to look away, but I can't. And I think that that's part of the reason that people are just like, have you seen Cheer? Like, that's what I want to be saying to people, you know, like, let's talk about it.
Right. No, I think that's definitely the way everyone talks about it to me is that it seems like it really just sort of strikes a chord with people, like, and their own personal experiences. And again, I think it's like really amazingly made, and I'm glad that I've watched, so I've seen about half of it so far, and I intend to keep going. So let's move into spoilers. And obviously we should say that, as with every documentary, these are real life spoilers. So in some ways it's not quite the same as spoiling Game of Thrones, but if that said, if you want the surprises in the show to be a surprise when you watch them, feel free to stop listening now. Do we want to actually sort of run through each episode, or are there just specific things that we want to focus on?
I was just kind of going to go broadly, and then if we wanted to drill down on any one scene or thing, we could. So I'm not going to go like by episode so much as just the story.
That sounds great.
Remember it, if that's cool. So, you know, we start by just learning what exactly the whole competitive cheer thing is. And then we kind of get into the fact that, okay, they have this one competition at the very end of the year. It's 2 minutes and 15 seconds. And that is what they're judged on. So their whole existence for the, first 9 months of the year is working on this, but it really heightens in the spring. And a few weeks from when we start watching them, which I think is late January, they are going to make decisions on who is on mat and who is off mat. And that means that like 20 of the people on the team will be able to actually compete in the final routine at NCAAs, but the rest will not. And we start to get to know certain characters, Jerry, Morgan, et cetera. And it kind of confused me at first because they didn't seem to be the ones that were, you know, the characters we were following didn't seem to be the all-stars of the team, right? And it was kind of confusing to me. Not that they don't have interesting lives or anything, but you kind of want to see the people who are going to be in the big show at the end, right? Like, you want to follow their triumph personally. But it turns out there are many, many injuries. One of which is, as Anthony said, this girl named Sherbs, that's her last name or part of her last name, who was like the star flyer top girl, I think they call her. And she gets hurt. And that means that Morgan, one of the girls that we've gotten to follow, kind of gets bumped up on Matt. And I don't know about you guys, but I really appreciated the relationship with Monica and Morgan. I actually think it had its own arc in the season, around her just like eventually at one point Monica's asking her to do another thing that she's not ready to do really, or isn't as practiced in. And she's like, I got you, girl. Like, I'll do it. Whatever you want me to do. Like, I'll do it. You know? And there was just a nice level of comfort and kind of trust between them, I thought.
Well, yeah, I also took it though, like Morgan just has Monica up on such a pedestal that she would never say no. But that could just have been my own interpretation of their relationship at that point in time. Well, but
I like what Morgan said, which was
please her. You know, she sees her as this surrogate mother figure almost. So, well,
and Monica said that she was like, she aims to please, she'll do anything to please. But I did like what Morgan said, which was, if Monica trusts me to do it, then I need to trust myself, right? And like, maybe that's misguided. Like, maybe we think Monica's reckless and maybe that's not the best way to think of it. But for me, for a girl who went through Morgan's story, which the background of is that her parents essentially abandoned her and her brother, and they lived alone in a trailer and were starving.
As children,
as little kids. Yeah. She's been abandoned. The people who are supposed to care for her and protect her and help her believe in herself weren't there. And now she's got this person who's saying, I think you can do it. And she's taken that and turned that into, I can do it. And like, I just can't really shit on that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just think that's a great thing. Like, it might be slightly dangerous, but at the same time, Morgan was fine. She did it. She achieved her goal and was put in a clutch situation where she had to step up and do something that she maybe didn't believe she could do, but was given the strength by her coach, right? Like, that's what coaches are really supposed to do.
It's true. But on the flip side of that, at a different point, you know, Morgan went to the ER because her ribs or sides were hurting so badly, and she left against the doctor's advice and didn't take the medicine because it's muscle relaxers or whatever, which she couldn't practice. And the doctors were warning her, you know, if you go back and your ribs crack, which they could, you could have your organs pierced or even die. But she goes back to the gym. And it's just, so there is that line of, you know, no matter how much the coach pushes her, Monica pushes her, like, was there, I just don't know if there was enough oversight to, when these kids are really injured, is somebody looking out for them who's not just, I don't know if Monica needs a little bit of checks and balances is all I'm saying.
I don't know. I just read it so differently. And I don't know if it's because of the sports I played and stuff, but like, I think that there's been a lot of flack on Monica because at one point Morgan said, I'm going to go to the doctor. I'm going to go to the ER to get my ribs popped back in. And Monica says, Okay, that's cute. And I don't know. I'm just 100% on Team Monica for that, because I know here's the math that I think that I know. I'm not an expert, and wasn't there, and I didn't examine Morgan's injury, nor would I know what to do if I did examine it. I'm not a fucking doctor. But I do know that I've had bruised ribs before. They don't increase the likelihood of breaking your ribs. And, you know, you don't pop your ribs back in or out of anything. They don't, you know, it's pain. It's pain, right? Like, you are banging into things. You are going to have pain. You are going to have bruises. And I think Monica's approach to it was like, okay, I think that if a doctor had told Morgan, you will break your ribs, your ribs are at a high likelihood of being broken and could puncture your organs, it would be a different story, right?
See, now that's what I thought they said. So maybe I need to go rewatch that piece. But it looked like I thought, or I remembered it as them saying, basically, you have a very high likelihood of exactly that happening. And she said, well, I'm leaving anyway. I need to practice.
I just heard it as you have a high likelihood of doing that because that's a high likelihood in your sport. Like hockey players also have a high likelihood of breaking their ribs. Like maybe I'm misreading it or whatever, but I do just think that there is an aspect to athletics and to coaching that has to do with, like I said, understanding the difference between pain and an injury. A bruise is pain. A sprain is an injury, right? Like you have to know the difference between those two things and know what your risk level is and know what your body's capable of. And that's on the athlete. Like Morgan might be a little girl, but it's on her and it's her choice. You know what I mean? Like you can't blame Monica for Morgan saying, oh, I'm going to put myself in harm's way. If you feel like it's too harmful, then take yourself out of it. Don't do it. You're an adult. You know, like that's how I feel about it.
But the athlete is making the decision to go to the ER. Why is it not like some assistant coach or doctor or somebody?
Because they can't know her body. They can't know her body. Like, how are they supposed to know what she needs?
I think that part of the question is then what are the incentives and the pressures in that context? Like, is it a team and a structure where somebody feels comfortable saying, oh, I really got to tap out of this because I think I'm in a, you know, really bad place physically? Or is it a context where, yes, technically, you know, if something bad happens, you can bow out, but like fundamentally, like all of the pressure is on you to always just grit your teeth and get through it. That I think then a coach has to take some responsibility for that.
A coach does need to foster a space where there is trust so that when you say, I am injured, I'm not hurt, I'm injured, I need to step out, that's acceptable, right? Like there has to be, that space has to exist. We never saw that, you know? So there may be an argument there in the fact that Monica hasn't created that space or that trust, but you also have to weigh that against the fact that she deals with incoming 18, 19 year olds who maybe don't know the difference between a pain and an injury. And probably hears a lot. I bet you money that if Gabby had walked up and said, I'm injured, there would be no question. Okay, sit down. You're injured. We got to get it looked at, because Gabby is an athlete that has been around forever. And it felt very much to me as an observer that she's the kind of person who definitely knows the difference between those two things, right? Morgan to me is someone who doesn't seem to know the difference between those two things a little bit. So that's just my read on it. I might be sound like the bitch, but that's just how
I guess the other thing that's interesting to me also is just the way we talk about these cheerleaders in the sense of, that as again at like the age of 18 and 19 is like, yes, you're legally an adult, but in so many ways you're still very unformed and immature. Again, this is less a point about the politics of it, but I just think like that's part of what makes the show so compelling too, is it is this point where you're not just a kid, and so you actually, and in these cases they're incredibly accomplished, like shockingly. The things that they can do are far beyond, you know, anything I could have done, you know, athletically ever. And yet at the same time, in some ways, they're so sheltered and, you know, have had such a limited experience because they've devoted so much of their life to this one thing, that I guess, again, part of it is just saying, I think that's really part of what's fascinating about the show. And part of it is also saying, I think I want to resist. I think sometimes we either just say, oh, they're a kid, therefore they're not responsible, or they're adult and they're fully responsible. But I think in general, and specifically in the case of people who are, let's say, in their late teens or early 20s, I think it's again, sort of in between of, yes, you have to take responsibility, but they're not, I don't think we have to talk about them as if they're completely fully formed adults yet either.
Right. Maybe it's unfair for me to say, like, you're an adult, make your own decision. But at the same time, like, my politics probably lean on the side of, you know, personal responsibility in making your own choices, like, you know, but I fluctuate as well. Cause when I was thinking about this episode and I was kind of, I slippery sloped myself and I was like, well, you can't, you know, people choose to smoke and that's dangerous and we don't outlaw cigarettes. But at the same time, I kind of feel like we should outlaw alcohol. Right. Like, and that's not fair. I can't say you can outlaw one and not the other. So I, who the fuck knows what I know? It's very complicated. It's a question of personal freedoms versus, you know, rules and regulations that protect us from ourselves. And that's a complicated, we fight about it now every day in politics, right? Like that's just a thing that won't go away. So, but I do think it taps into that in a very visceral way.
Yeah. I'm just not sure that any of the kids would willingly take themselves off the team, even if they were injured, because they're just so like, I think they may ignore things that could potentially be injuries because they wouldn't want to let Monica down. They wouldn't want to let their team down. And there's just so much draw to be on the mat versus a backup or something.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know. That was also just sort of how the edit went. You know, that's the takeaway was that this is just crucial for them to be on the mat. This is so important to them. And Monica is so demanding of them that they would never let her down. You know, a little pain, they'll fight through it. But anyway, I'd also love to talk about some of their other stories and like the good side of Monica, which was that she was really fighting for them in a conservative town. You know, she was sticking up for these kids who sometimes didn't fit in with what, you know, a society around them thought that they should, you know, what they should be doing. So she definitely has her her good side too, beyond just leading them all to championships.
Yeah. And there was a scene too, where they were talking about the kids and the team were talking about how, like, you know, we do it to win and we do it for each other and we do it because we love cheer. But like at the end of the day, we do it for Monica. And there was, you know, someone else who was talking about Monica and was like, she has enough trophies, like she has, you know, she could be off doing whatever she wanted in the world, but like, and she said it herself too, she was like, I don't want, my biggest fear and why I do this is that I don't want these kids to have come to Navarro to expect the experience of winning a national championship and not get it. And there, it felt like a lot of pressure to give them the win. Do you know what I mean? Give them every opportunity so that they could have, because she's experienced the win. She knows how it feels. And sure, she probably wants more, but they only have a limited window. She'll come back next year and try again, right? Like they have this one shot, and it felt like she was really dedicated to the idea of making sure that those kids were winners. They've been through all of this, they put in the work, and they deserve to win. You know what I mean?
Like I said that, but I definitely got the sense that she wanted to win those competitions just as much, if not more, than some of the kids. Because, you know, you saw the kids making decisions like, you know, to like Lexi broke the rules, you know? She knew what the rules were, and Monica's very strict about them, but she went ahead and broke them. So to some extent, I think that's, you want to, like, she's saying what she wants to believe. Like, I don't need another trophy. I've got plenty of trophies. But on the other hand, I think she definitely wanted them to win just so, so much. It comes through in how she, you know, coaches them and how kind of tough she is on them. I don't think it's just doing it for them. And she didn't really care whether she wins or not, you know.
No, I don't think she didn't care. But I think part of why she wants to win so much is for them so that they can get that. I think she does care a lot about them. I think that she has a very stealthy way of showing it through and through. And this is like, you know, I'm probably just like pulling a lot from my own experiences, but I've had some coaches that have just totally changed my life, and they don't show love the same way that in other scenarios in life, or affection, or, you know, care the same way that people in your work life do, or your friends at school do, or your parents do, or your family does. Like that, it's a different interaction entirely between a coach and a player. And there's a lot of weird stuff built into that. Like you saw all the rituals that they do and the superstitions that they have, and, you know, 50 pushups every time someone hits the mat. Like these things are, they're like highly systematized. You know what I mean? It's kind of like closer to the army than it is to a club or a group of friends or, you know, a work team. Like it's, and I think that
it's not necessarily unique to, you know, sports. Like I know that there's like actors who are putting on plays and they have a thing they do before a play, or, you know, they have rituals like telling each other to break a leg and it's bad luck if you don't say that to each other. So there's that superstitious element in any sort of like performance kind of performance oriented group, perhaps even workplaces that where it's really about putting on a show, you know, of some sort.
I guess my point is that like the dynamics of a coach and a player with all of those things built into how a team functions in a sport and the competition of it all and the binary nature of winning and losing. Like, I think that relationship is just a very weird different thing. And you could argue that a director and an actor's relationship is also a very weird different thing that isn't represented often between like your average manager and employee, right? Like that it's just a different type of intimacy. And I don't know. I kind of am behind Monica. I think she's a flawed individual, and I think there are definitely some selfish bits to her, but I believe that she cared about those kids and wanted to get them the win just as much as she wanted it for herself.
And I mean, I think one thing I would certainly say for Monica is that, that based on what we see in the film, there's a lot of legitimate criticisms, but at the same time, in a lot of ways, she just, it seems like part of what you respond to about her is just that she falls really neatly in a lot of ways into this sort of archetype of the demanding but ultimately sort of supportive coach who like can push you to greatness. And I think that in a lot of ways, those are the kinds of people that we idolize in a lot of different contexts, whether that's athletics or in business and things like that. And I mean, part of the reason I think why she's been both so embraced and also viewed kind of skeptically or criticized is because it's a lot of, I think usually that figure is a man, at least in popular culture. And so they're seeing somebody who's being this kind of hard ass coach, who's a woman, I think is part of why people are so drawn to her. I also want to say that I think in addition to the coach athlete dynamic, I also really like the dynamics within the team itself and how there just seemed to be this really, really intense bond between everyone and the way they all like, again, this sort of ritualized component I found fascinating, but I also totally believe that all of them, because they spend so much time together, because they literally rely on each other for their physical safety, there is this sense of closeness and comfort with each other that you just don't see that often. And I found that kind of moving.
Yeah. And it was like, it was stronger than some of the regular like social dynamics and politics that like can make a mess of things, right? Like there were certain situations, for example, who's on and off Matt. There were two roommates who were vying for a similar position, right? Like Ladarius and Jerry, kind of, not the same exact position, but Jerry could have taken Ladarius off Matt, right? Like at a point. And they kind of, you know, pecked at each other a little bit, but you never felt like, and at times I was like, oh no, don't fight. Like you guys, you're friends, like be there for each other, be supportive. But they were, and they ended up, you know, always kind of like being okay, you know? And I really appreciated that bit too. I mean, there is something special about being on a team. Particularly like that, where you have this chemistry. It's not just that they're in charge of each other's physical safety, but the way that they know each other in this rhythm, this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, like, and you're all kind of synchronized in this thing together. Your bodies are all, you know, touching and pushing each other around, throwing each other in the air, catching each other. There is something weird that happens, like, I think psychologically and emotionally when you are in tune with people like that, you know?
So since we're in spoilers, I mean, are there other storylines that we want to talk about or the ending or anything like that?
Sure. So like I mean, there's many injuries and we get a background on kind of everyone. We've touched on a lot of them. You know, Jerry is a really interesting character. His parents or his mom passed away and he, you know, is such a positive, like you just can't not love Jerry. He's just so positive and funny and sweet. But we do get to a point where we've kind of got our final on Matt going and we go into show offs, which is like, essentially, they're doing their full out routine, but not for as a competition, just to like show people right in the area. So the first one is for alumni only. So all the Navarro Cheer alumni come in, and I guess the parents too, if they want, and watch them go through a full run through. And that's when someone gets pretty hurt. I think it's Ashley, who is one of the flyers, and she has this rib injury. And it's at that moment that Monica says, Morgan, I'm going to need you to do this thing, because they just weren't sure that Ashley would be able to deal with the pain. If she just goes down like that, if it gets hit the wrong way, you can't do that in the middle of the routine, you know, like at Daytona. So that's when Morgan gets her bump up, and then they go to their second show off. And this one's in front of other teams. And I think like the student body, right? Or like something like that. It's in front of people interested in cheerleading, including other teams. Not those that they were competing directly against, but other teams. And it's kind of the first one that's in front of a real, true audience, not like something more insular in their gym. And they get through most of it, but they mess up the pyramid. And it's worth noting, I don't think we've talked about this yet, but there's a lot of like math involved in cheerleading, where they get a scorecard and they get points for difficulty and they get points for technique. And it's broken down amongst a bunch of different things like jumps and running, tumbling and standing, tumbling and presentation. And then the pyramid. And the pyramid is this thing that has evolved over time. I remember when our cheerleaders were doing pyramids and they were static, like you just get them all up there in interesting ways and then you bring them all back down. Now pyramids apparently are like, things are popping up and down as you go, and you get one formation, then you go back down, and then you pop up in another formation, and then you go back down, and you pop up in another formation, and all the while doing flips and tosses and crazy shit. It's the hardest thing of any routine, and they've been struggling to kind of be consistent with it, and then they mess it up at this last show off, which is really where they're like supposed to get the confidence to know that they're going to nail it at Daytona, and they don't. So that's like really intense. And then they finally head off to Daytona. There's some emotion involved with the fact that, you know, they're all going. It's their last time they're going to be cheering together. We go through like kind of the nerves of both Monica and the team the night before. And then we get out there and they're doing their routine and they are fucking killing it, Anthony. Like, you really got to see it, because they're nailing it out of the park. It's beautiful. All of the stuff that they were most worried about, which are like essentially their unassisted stunts, which is one guy and one girl doing stunts. They do five of them at the same time. So if someone falls, it's like really obvious. But if someone else jumps in to help, then you don't get as many points for it. So it's whenever Monica was saying over and over again, it's smart cheerleading, I'm pretty sure that's the kind of stuff she was talking about, where it's like, we're going to lose more points from falling than we would from unassisted, or from assisting, but like, if you can get unassisted, you should try for it. And those decisions are made in a split second, right? Like based on balance and what's happening in the moment, which I found really interesting. So anyways, they nail all of this really tough stuff. And then someone random who like wasn't really a main character in any way, they're doing backflips and he lands on his foot and boom, like, you know, right when he lands, he like jumps up and grabs his foot and like jumps off Matt and is like definitely very injured. And then the music stops, and in the docuseries, we don't know the rules of how anything works. So we're like, oh my God, like, is this how it ends? Like, this is fucking terrible. But then you're
so mad.
Me too.
I watched that whole thing only to see them fail.
I know. I was like, oh my God, this cannot be like, and also because it's like one person, one injury. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? It just feels like it's not like it's not even like they messed something up, you know, like something big, like someone fell or got dropped. And it was like, it was just like one person's individual fucked up backflip takes this whole thing down. Like, it's crazy. And so you see Monica rushing around backstage, and some person who's with the NCA comes up to her and is like, we have some flexibility. So you have about 30 minutes. Either he comes back in or you sub in an alternate, but you have about 30 minutes. So we find out, okay, shit, well, they can do it again, but this guy is totally down for the count. And I think he's a pretty central dude. He's like a central stunter and has a really important role, both in the pyramid and in the individual stunts.
Who knew there was this loophole?
Right? Like, where, okay. So the rules are that they have 30 minutes to get him back in, and that they're only judged on what happens after the music stops. So everything they did up until the music stopped was a locked in score, right?
Huh.
Right.
And so then they pick up the judging from the moment the music stopped. And so they still haven't gotten through their pyramid though. And who knows what the hell could go wrong next? Like, yeah, maybe they're not going to be judged off something going wrong, but it'll mess with your, you know, your mentality, right? And your confidence. And it could mess other people up if you like screw up a tumbling routine, you don't know how to get back in and onto it, right? Like, anything could go wrong. So they have to do it all over again.
The whole thing.
Again, yeah. Fucking nail it. And this kid comes in with like having had 30 minutes of practice, but they do know in like two episodes before that, Monica is sitting there and she's talking to the camera and she says, you know, what's weird about cheerleading is that what keeps me up the most is that I spend most of my time trying to figure out what could go wrong so that we have a plan B and a plan C, right? Like you just got to figure out. And she's like, and a million things could go wrong. We've been doing this for 6 months and, you know, only so, you know, something completely new could still go wrong on the day of. Like, we don't, I can only imagine up so many scenarios that could go wrong, right? I'm trying to plan for all of them. And in one episode, she was like, you know, what if, let's just make sure that this guy knows all of, I think the guy's name is Austin who got hurt. Let's just make sure that this other guy knows everything that Austin is doing so that just in case he's ready. And she just like kind of randomly at one point had done this. So he actually was ready. He had gotten in the reps and he could know how to do it. And they nailed it and they won. And it was lovely.
And then, you cry.
And they run into the ocean. And there's this moment where, cause they talked, one of their superstitions, Anthony, that you don't know about is that at some point, so there was a tradition of whoever wins the national championship runs into the ocean. And at some point, after so many wins, it had become superstition on Monica's team to not touch the water unless you win or until you win. So nobody, they're there for like 4 days before and they don't go swim in the ocean because go into the water if you're a winner. And you might lose only and not go in the water at all, right? And so they win and they run into the water and there's this shot of Lexi standing in the water and with her eyes closed, just kind of like smiling, just like taking in the moment. And like, I just felt that so much. I was like, yeah, like I'm taking in the moment too. Let's all take this moment in. Like, this is lovely. And then the very end, there is like a kind of, to me, felt like a bad sign, honestly, because this should have all been in season two instead. But it was like a tryout for next season. And then they also kind of caught up a little bit with Lexi, and Lexi had been kicked off the team and was getting back to her old ravey ways. And then it ended.
That really upset me too, because there was a part in the show where she said something along the lines of she didn't mind being busy and having to work all the time because she knew what it was like to not have anything going on in your life. And I don't remember the exact quote, but that was the gist of it. And to see her just at the end, sort of, she's off the team and she's immediately just sort of like messing around, and there's the implication that maybe drugs are involved. You know, because I mean, I don't think they actually said what happened, what she was found with something in her car, but they didn't say like
So I think that she was in a car. She was in a car with other people where something was found. Yeah. And so I think, you know, we don't know like the details of whether or not they were her drugs or that she had used them or she didn't even know they were in the car. Like it could, you know what I mean? There are so many different shades to that explanation. She knew.
You can just tell. She's definitely a great athlete and everything, but she has that party side to her. So she was not in a car with somebody who had drugs on them, and she wasn't aware that there could possibly be drugs in that car.
That's totally possible. I mean, you kind of know who you're with, right? But you don't. Yeah. So she could have taken the risk of saying, like, this is probably someone I shouldn't be hanging out with. But if someone doesn't tell you they have drugs in their car and you get in their car, like, it's totally possible to not know they have drugs in their car, even if you know that they are prone to do drugs and, you know, like, they are a druggy person.
I mean, there's room for, like, benefit of doubt. And, you know, she could have. I don't think she got in any legal trouble for it. She wasn't in court or in jail or anything. So it wasn't, you know, a serious, serious thing. But, you know, if the team has a rule that you don't get yourself in those kind of situations, you don't get yourself in trouble. And she was taking that risk to hang out with her friends who could put her in that situation. Then I think that, you know, that was a decision she made because, I mean, at the end of the day, she's a kid. She's still a college student. She's not like a mature adult making like all the best choices in life necessarily. But it was just so sad because as like somebody who's old enough to be her older sister, you know, you just really wanted her like you wanted the best for her. You wanted the best for all of them. After the stories you heard, you just wanted to see them go on to do great things and not kind of fall behind, take a misstep, get kicked off the team or whatever. So it was really a sad ending. And that is one reason why I just went on Instagram to find out, you know, what's going on with them now. And I was like looking at her posts at the time when I found her on Instagram and she was, you know, at a posing and didn't look like it was a cheer outfit, you know, necessarily. It was just kind of, just street clothes and goofing around and just being young and having fun. And that was fine. But I was like, oh gosh, I hope she's not out of cheerleading forever. But
yeah. And she's obviously very talented too. I had a soft spot for Lexi for sure. Like she was just
so talented. The power she had in her jumps was like incredible. Her tumbling or whatever you want to call it.
I did like that there were so many, like, I feel like I have a whole fresh vocabulary now, right? Like, don't you feel like you got taught a language, right? Like, we have the stunters and the tumblers and the stumblers and the flyer and the top girl. We can hit zero. We're off
full
mat.
Out.
We're going full out. All of them. Yeah, yeah. We got the toe full to the whip full. Can you do the toe full through to the whip full to the full full?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm like, you guys sound stupid. Shut up. They're like, can you do the toe full through the whip full through the half to the half to the full full? And I'm like, you guys sound crazy. Shut up. Stop it right now.
That's great.
or throw it. Yeah. I don't know if he's going to throw when I tell him to throw. You know, I'm like, oh, my God, you guys have your own little language. Anyways, I was delighted by it. I think everyone should watch it. Go watch it right now.
Yeah, it's great.
5 stars.
All right, well, we should probably wrap it up there. As always, I will just close by reminding listeners that they can always subscribe or leave a review in Apple Podcasts or any other app. And we'll be back next week with a review of some other streaming show or movie. Sarah and Jordan, have a great weekend.
All right. Yay.